This Raw Talk podcast is sponsored by our friends at Mortgage Express. We'd like to thank Alfonso Archuleta of Mortgage Express for supporting the music and ministry of M88. They're located at 3701 San Mateo Northeast at the corner of San Mateo and Comanche. Their phone number is 237-2460. It's the support of listeners and businesses like Alfonso Archuleta and Mortgage Express that makes the music and ministry of M88 possible. Thanks again to Mortgage Express and Alfonso Archuleta for sponsoring this episode of the Raw Talk podcast. And welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. I'm your host, Yo. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. And tonight we're going to talk about, we've been talking a lot recently about ministering to the homeless and some ways that we can reach out to our community, be involved in our community, and help out the people in need. And we're going to kind of continue along that theme in a different way. But we'll get to that here in just a moment. Got a couple little business items to take care of first. First, we want to thank our friends over at Mortgage Express, Alfonso Archuleta of Mortgage Express, for supporting M88 and this show, Raw Talk. They're located at 3701 San Mateo Northeast at the corner of San Mateo and Comanche. Their phone number 237-2460. And without listeners and businesses like Alfonso Archuleta and Mortgage Express, you wouldn't have M88 or a show like Raw Talk. So we thank you very much for our friends for supporting this program, for supporting this station. And speaking of that, you can help support M88 later this month, July 26th, at the M88 Golf Tournament, the Roman Gold Creative M88 Golf Tournament out at Santa Ana Golf Club. We're going to be out there, play a little golf, just have a good time of fellowship. And if you'd like to get in on that, you can get your team together, get signed up at m88.org, and all the proceeds benefit M88. This is one of the big ways that we help keep this ministry going. So if you'd like to help out with that or be a sponsor, you can sponsor one of the DJ teams, sponsor a hole out at the golf tournament, whatever you'd like to do. We'd like to get you involved with that, and thank you so much for your support so that we can do what we do here. We wouldn't be able to do it without you. So more details about this year's golf tournament available at m88.org. Also, August 3rd, it's the O2 Experience. And next week and then the following week, we're actually going to talk a little bit, be like a two-week preview of the O2 Experience as we talk about sexual purity, God's plan for sex, what do we do when you struggle with pornography, are some of the things we're going to talk about the next couple weeks on Raw Talk. And then August 3rd, Levi Lesko will be here to be a part of the O2 Experience along with Waverly and the Marriott. And if you'd like more details about that, ticket info and all that good stuff about the O2 Experience, how we can rediscover sexual purity in a sexually polluted culture, just visit O2Experience.com. And with that, all the business stuff taken care of, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about ministering to a segment of society that's often just locked away and forgotten about, unseen, unheard, and most people like it that way. But we're going to talk a little bit about what we as Christians can do to minister the gospel of Christ to all the people who are in prison. And, the issue even comes up, well, should we be doing that? After all, they committed a crime. They're getting what they deserve. Why should we worry about doing anything to help them out? Well, that's just one of the issues that we're going to discuss tonight. And if you'd like to write down the phone number, it's 505-338-5790. If you want to jump in on tonight's conversation, when you hear something that stirs your heart or you got a question that you'd like to ask, write down that phone number and hang on to it, 505-338-5790. Got two guests joining us tonight. We have Greg Griegos. From Calvary of Albuquerque, one of the pastors here, a guy who also ministers in the prisons here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, does something called the God Pod, and we'll find out all about that here in just a moment. Also, we have Molly Gill. She's a staff attorney. She works for Families Against Mandatory Minimum. She's out in Washington, D.C., and she has quite a passion for helping out people in prison. So thank you, Molly, for joining us tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and thank you, Greg, for coming on in and sharing some of your time this weekend.
It's my privilege.
Well, Greg, let's start with you, and then I'll come to you, Molly. Greg, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and then what it is that you do to with the God Pod, what that's all about. Just give people just a real quick idea of who you are and what you're doing in the prisons to share the gospel.
Well, I personally am an ex-inmate. I came to the Lord in L.A. County, facing 15 to life for drive-by shootings. By God's grace, I beat my case, and I made a promise to the Lord that I wasn't going to look back, and I haven't. And obviously now I've been a chaplain at the Bernalillo County Metropolitan Detention Center for 8 years now, and I've been a pastor here almost 4 years. And I run we have two programs. They're called Straight Street Program, and basically it's a chaplain's education program, and we have three Bible studies a day, 7 days a week. It's a very structured program, and we've had tremendous fruit. Right now here, we're getting ready to graduate three guys from our shepherd school. We've had eight of our guys finish the school of ministry. We have guys in every aspect of our ministry here at Calvary.
And Molly Gill, working out there in Washington, D.C. as a lawyer with Families Against Mandatory Minimum. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into law, and why it is you're doing what you're doing now?
Sure. Well, I originally never wanted to be a lawyer, but went to a Christian college and reached a point in my life where I was just praying about what God wanted me to do. And felt like he told me to go to law school, so I did, went to the University of Minnesota. And, I worked in a prosecutor's office while I was in law school. I helped prosecute gang crimes, and saw a lot of, terrible crimes, terrible murders, and got to work with victims and prosecutors. And eventually just kind of realized that kind of work wasn't what I wanted to do in the long run, and that actually my heart was really with the prisoners and the people who were being charged and convicted more than it was with the prosecutors. And so I ultimately ended up moving to Washington, D.C. I work for a nonprofit organization called Families Against Mandatory Minimums. We're a sentencing reform organization, so our primary work is to try to get sentencing laws changed and to make sure that people get fair punishments. And we do a lot of work with we have about 15,000 members nationwide, and the vast majority of them are in prison. And I feel like it's the greatest work I could be doing for God.
Well, that's very interesting. I didn't know that about you. Molly Gill is actually a close friend of my wife, close friend of the family, and I didn't know any of this, so that shows what a good friend I am. Sorry about that, Molly. Well, Greg, I've seen you around campus. I don't know you very well either, although I've seen you share devos and share a little bit about yourself. And when you were coming in here, I thought it'd be very interesting because when it comes to ministering to people in prison, that's not something that Christians typically think about. You know, when we think about helping out other people, we think about the widows and the orphans and that segment of society. And yet prisoners often get overlooked, which brings up the question, well, do they deserve to be overlooked? Is there any compelling reason at all that Christians shouldn't get involved with helping out prisoners? And what would you say if someone were to ask you that?
Well, you know, personally, I know that there are some people that have done some heinous crimes, but regardless of their incarceration or the situation, our biggest goal, you know, the whole thrust of the penal system was originally for correction, basically for them to actually change. And it doesn't really happen very much unless there's some active program or active people doing something to try and invoke that change. And I've seen a lot of success in my venues. I have to move people out of my unit because sometimes they just don't want to have anything to do with the things of God, or they just don't want to do what they've always done, and that's their choice, you know. But the reality is that there's some of them have gone through certain things in their life, and they desire to change and have realized that that they've done something wrong, you know. As my life personally, I came to a point where I realized what I was doing was wrong in a point where I really believed I needed to change and do something different. And once I came to that full-on conclusion, everything changed in my life. And I've seen that happen over and over. I've duplicated myself, you know, tenfold here.
And Molly, I mean, what do you think about Christians getting involved with inmates? Why is that such an overlooked segment of Christian charity? And is there really any compelling reason for Christians to get involved? I mean, you have a totally different experience from Greg, and yet you both are essentially doing the same thing from different angles. So what do you think about Christians getting involved with helping out prisoners?
Well, to really push the envelope here, I think they're disobeying a direct command of Christ if they neglect prisoners. Matthew 25, Jesus talks about, you know, visiting prisoners. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. And, you know, he talks about the righteous saying, Lord, when did we ever see you in prison or see you naked or clothe you? And he says, you know, assuredly, as I'd say to you, inasmuch as you've done it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. And I think that that just is a really succinct, clear expression of how much Christ cares about these people and how seriously he wants us to take it. And you know, they are, I think they're an overlooked segment of society because, let's face it, a lot of people, the vast majority of people who end up in prison are guilty. You know, they have done some bad things, and some of them have done really bad things. And then a lot of them also, I think it's important to say right at the outset that a lot of people are in prison because they're drug addicts or because they had a substance abuse problem that led to their crime. And we have a real fear, I think, of drugs and crime in this country. And I often see that we don't have a very educated discussion about who these people are and why they commit the crimes that they commit and what might some of the alternatives might be.
You know, you bring up an interesting point when you're talking about a vast majority of those who are in prison are guilty of doing something wrong, which brings up, in my mind, some interesting territory insofar as we're all guilty when it comes to committing a crime because we're all sinners. We've all been proven guilty. Jesus Christ took that guilt away from us. And Greg, let me ask you, how does this play into our sense of categorizing sin? You know, as Christians, we get very comfortable, especially when it comes to the idea of crime and punishment in prison. Well, at least I'm not as bad as them, you know, and that's obviously not the way for us to think if we want to share the gospel with the people who are in the deepest need. How can we overcome that?
Well, I kind of give it this way with a lot of the guys that are incarcerated. A lot of them like to watch some talk shows, some of these horrific talk shows that show all these bizarre people. And the reason they like that is because they have that very even incarcerated, they like to find somebody worse than them to say, hey, well, at least I'm not as bad as that crazy individual right there. But the reality is that's just passing the buck. And, you know, when I'm ministering to people incarcerated, I do let them know that you're not the victim, you're the perpetrator. And because to me it's a point of it comes to a point where you have to really take responsibility for your actions, and that's true repentance, to say, you know what, I did something wrong and I need to, you know, come to that point before God. And because a lot of them, my biggest struggle is the ones that justify their sin, justify, just like in our own personal lives, even whether you're incarcerated, whether you're out, if you justify your sin, you're bound to repeat it. Because in your mind, you've already resonated that it's okay. But the problem with a lot of individuals that get locked up, it's going to put them right back where they came from if they get out with that mentality. So to me, and that plays all into the seriousness of repentance. They need to be truly repentant, and they need to really recognize that they did something wrong, or that the real rehabilitation or the possibility for rehabilitation becomes kind of skewed.
One of the things I've learned recently when it comes to justice and grace is that when it happens to someone else, we always want justice. When it happens to us, we want grace. And Christians are probably some of the worst perpetrators of that. We're happy to have grace for ourselves, but when we see someone else do something wrong, no, we demand justice because that's only fair. But when we get caught doing something wrong, oh, but I serve a God of grace. Why can't I get away from this? And it seems like we need to kind of radically change our thinking when it comes to who we need to minister to and just how big grace is, because it seems like sometimes we leave prisoners out of that reach of grace. You know, they've already been convicted, but the fact of the matter is we were all convicted. We've all been guilty. It's just some of us didn't go to prison for it, but we're really not any different than them insofar as we needed a Savior to cleanse us of what we were guilty of, and prisoners need the same. We actually have a call, and if you'd like to join in on tonight's conversation, 505-338-5790 to join in as we talk about ministering to the segment of society that most people would rather forget about, prisoners. And quote-unquote ex-cons, or whatever you want to refer them to as. We have Jose on the line. Jose, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, Jose?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well.
Awesome. I actually have a friend that...
Is that your friend in the background?
No.
Okay.
My friend's father killed the drunk people while he was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Los Alamos. And it's really hard for me because I spent time with him in jail. And I know that he's innocent. It's really tough. He's a good man. I grew up with him. And basically, I just want to say that he's doing okay. And he gets out as soon as possible.
Well, Greg, do you have anything that you would like to offer to Jose as a word of comfort?
Well, the encouragement is whether he's incarcerated, whether he's out here in county jail or in prison, the reality is that the Lord is there with him. And sometimes I've found a lot of the guys, as well as myself, when I got incarcerated, it kind of gave me a chance to really reflect on life in general and to know that the Lord is in control, and there's nothing I'm going to do about it. And that situation, you start finding that I run across a lot of guys that have, you know, they may not be guilty of what they're being convicted of or being incarcerated for, but there's other things that have happened in their life, and for whatever reason, God has this window of time for them to be there. But the reality is that the best encouragement is I would be there for him, and you know, and to encourage him to get his eyes on the Lord, because you know, incarceration is one serious trial, but the reality is that there's so many other things that come in, sicknesses in people's lives, loss in people's lives. And as time goes on, you realize that the rain falls on the righteous and unrighteous. And the thing is you'll find that by encouraging him to get his eyes where they need to be on the Lord, no matter where he's at, God's there. And this whole existence is just a vapor, and our biggest concern should be for our eternal destination, and that should be where we're more concerned about your friend there.
Now, Jose, were you saying that your friend is innocent of what he was incarcerated for?
Yeah, actually, there's police officers here that let us commit crimes, and they let us purchase alcohol for your underage teens. I'm actually drinking right now. A little intoxicated. I just had a shot at the Aspen Lounge, and basically, I just want to know if Bill Richardson can intervene at some point. He worked with my father, Delbert Romero, in Santa Fe.
All right. Well, Jose, thanks so much for calling in, and we'll definitely keep you in prayer. And Molly, it brings up an interesting question insofar as just how fair is our sentencing system. Obviously, I can't always get it right, but what avenues are there available to us when it seems to have gotten something wrong?
Well, I think there are several things that we can do to change the sentencing laws, and just for the record, just to talk about them, a lot of the sentences that we're handing out today, particularly in the federal system, are very lengthy, and it is very common to see a nonviolent first-time drug offender get, not just, months in prison for a drug crime, but years and sometimes decades. We give out life sentences for drug crimes at the federal level. We give out 20-year, 25-year sentences. We're talking about people who are going away for a very serious amount of time. And in the federal system anyway, there's no parole. So that 25 years is a real 25 years. And when we see sentences that we think are too harsh, we can do a couple things. We can ask our elected representatives to change them, and a big part of that involves educating our members in Congress and our legislators about just how bad the laws are. And for those who are incarcerated, they can also seek executive clemency from their state's governor, or from, if you're convicted in federal court, you can seek a pardon or a commutation, which is a reduction in your sentence, from the president. Unfortunately, those executive clemency, which is basically an act of grace, an extension of mercy, is very, very rare, and we don't see too many of them these days. So most people, when you go to prison, you're going to serve all the time that you get, and sometimes that's just too much time.
Yeah, and I like the idea that these issues of executive clemency are basically acts of grace and mercy. But there's more ways that we can show grace and mercy just as Christians on a very local community level. Greg, why don't you talk about how in the ministry that you do, you're able, you know, maybe you're not getting them out of prison any sooner, but you're showing them that there is grace for these prisoners who are incarcerated, no matter what it is that they've done.
You know, to me, when I minister to, you know, to me, they're in jail and, you know, it's none of my business as to what they did or why they're there, other than the fact that they need Jesus. And if they do know Jesus, it's time to grow and be discipled. So that's my biggest thrust, is that I want to grow them up in the Lord. And that we love on them. There's, you know, just recently we took some pizza in there for them. And, you know, they're always excited about pizza and sodas in jail, you know, because, you know, you get jail food all the time. So you kind of, we've been blessed in a lot of ways. And it's been awesome as the Lord continues to have his hand on that facility. You see that the guys realize that there's a blessing because they're being drawn towards the Lord. And the Lord, when they're walking with the Lord and they're desiring to do the Lord's will, their life starts to be blessed in different ways. And not, you know, not only just monetarily, but they can tell their family situation starts to, but also they start to change because they actually speak to their family different. And the family starts noticing there's certain aspects in their life that is different. They're not cursing like they used to, and they're more they're not all hurt about being there. They're starting to be, they're trying to minister to their family. So it kind of changes. It's a different dynamic because they see that people love them and want to love on them, and it really changes their whole perspective about things.
Well, 505-338-5790, if you'd like to join in tonight's conversation as we talk about how we can minister to the prison segment of our society and extend to them grace and mercy, not only spiritually, but also perhaps helping them out with their physical needs while they're in prison. Again, a segment of society that we as Christians, let's be honest, often overlook. I'm guilty of that as well. I've just been learning recently to be more aware of the homeless, and that's been an area that I've been growing in as well, and that has kind of naturally led into me thinking more about prison, and they're essentially homeless. They're not at home, but they have the same type of needs as anyone else who is hurting. And Molly, let's ask the real interesting question insofar as, you know, you're talking about, well, some of these sentences are too harsh. They're a long time. Well, isn't that fair and just? Aren't these people getting what they deserve? And shouldn't we as Christians who serve a quote-unquote just God be happy that when someone commits a crime, well, they're gone, out of sight, out of mind, and we don't have to worry about it anymore? I mean, why should we be concerned about what the length is of, especially for first-time offenders?
Well, I would say two reasons, and I'll give you the faith-based reason first and the FAM reason second. Just for the record, Families Against Mandatory Minimums is not a Christian organization. We're not a faith-based organization. We're completely secular. So everything I say as a Christian tonight, I'm speaking really just for myself, and it's my own opinion. But, I mean, we should care because these are children of God. All of these people were created in God's image. God loves them. He has a purpose for them. He is not defining them by what they have done wrong. The problem is that in society, we often do. And we have seen statistic after statistic that says that the people who are most likely to end up in prison are some of the most vulnerable members of society, that the criminal justice, that, for example, they are homeless. A lot of homeless people end up in prison because you have to commit crimes to maintain a lifestyle when you're living on the street. To maintain any kind of home sometimes. We see a lot of mentally ill people who end up in prison. I've heard a statistic that up to 1 in 4 people in prison might be mentally ill. We see a lot of poor people. A lot of crimes are really economic. They're targeted at poor people. And we disproportionately see a large number of minorities in prison. Minorities far outnumber whites in prison, even though based on a lot of different crimes, and particularly drug crimes, we know statistically that blacks and whites are using drugs pretty much the same at the same rate. So, I mean, we see some real problems that raise some real fairness questions. And we see that prison is impacting a lot of vulnerable people. And one thing I see throughout the Bible that is that Christ cared about vulnerable people. You know, he was always hanging out with underdogs, the people who were sort of marginalized in society. Women at the time of Christ were about as marginalized as you could get. And Christ was hanging out with them and trying to, you know, give them a voice. And so I think that by, you know, trying to care about this population, we're recognizing the inherent value that they have in God. And the reason Families Against Mandatory Minimums has a saying that we use on some of our posters, which is, it could happen to someone you love. And if you ever go to our website, it's www.famm.org, www.fam.org. You can read a bunch of profiles of individual people who are in prison and serving very lengthy sentences. And they look just like your neighbors, just like your coworkers, just like your sons and daughters and your parents. And those are the people who we're putting away for 10 years, 20 years, 25 years in life. And I think we really need to take a good hard look and realize that when you send someone to prison for 10 years, you're taking, typically what you're doing is you're taking a father outside of the home, you're taking away a breadwinner, and that has an impact on the family, it has an impact on society, because now you've got a single mom who is, you know, trying to raise her kids, maybe has to take multiple jobs just to make ends meet, might have to go on welfare. And then on the back end, we penalize these people, too, because when prisoners come out, their record stays with them, and they have to report on every job application that they've been convicted, and there's a lot of discrimination against people who were formerly in prison. So even though we have this concept that you go to prison and you, quote-unquote, pay your debt to society, a lot of people leave prison and find out that they're still paying, and they're still going to be paying 5 years, 10 years, maybe the rest of their lives. So it raises some real fairness issues. It raises some issues about families that are left behind and the impact that it has on them. And, again, just the idea that these are people who, you know, God loves no matter what they've done, just the same way that he loves us. So we should care.
What sort of perspective would you add to that, Greg, having experienced it for yourself firsthand and then continuing to minister within the prison system to people who have been incarcerated, you know, all that stuff that Molly just said? What would you add?
Well, I see the jail and the prison system as just another sector of mission field. I see it as, you know, it's a mission field just like any other. You know, you, as time goes on, you start desiring to reach them, and what I found is the main reason I set up the God's Pods in Bernalillo County Metropolitan Detention Center is because it's the biggest feeder of all the prison system in our state. And so the guys that lose their case are usually the most grounded. They're the ones that have been in the program the longest. So they ultimately go to prison with that, with a strong mentality of wanting to change. And so they actually take that with them. And they actually really infuse that to the prison system. So to me, it's really almost an exciting way of seeing how many lives are getting touched by just one little touch point of going into the county jail here. And because we get to, you know, each one of my program has averages about 90 men in the program, and so I get to really have a lot of contact with a lot of individuals, and the ones the percentage that lose their case actually go on and they're pretty solid by then, because they've usually fought their case. I've had guys fight their case up to three or four years before they even end up in prison. So some of them actually win, and they've actually just spent two or three years of their life just fighting the case. There's an individual who just got released because they found the DNA from a guy in another city who's in another county jail here in New Mexico, that they had him for 3 years for raping an 11-year-old little girl. And at first, because he's kind of slow, he said he did it. But the DNA didn't match him. It matched somebody else. So now they've just released him from being in there for 3 years fighting that case.
You know, one of the problems that we hear a lot about is how overcrowded the prison system is, how much money it's costing. I was reading something that said, you know, it costs more to maintain the prison system the way it is right now than it is to rebuild Iraq right now. There's a lot of money that gets invested into it. And typically, it doesn't necessarily change anything, which brings up the issue of, well, if you want to help change people, what is it that's going to help them change? Sending them to prison doesn't seem to solve anything. It's like sending them to Arkham Asylum. You know, the bad guys in the Batman comic books, they go into Arkham all the time. They come back and keep doing the exact same things. It's a rotating door. So what difference does it make if they get sent to Arkham Asylum or, you know, in reality, if they get sent to prison? And one of the things I've always struggled with is why people think we can legislate morality. You know, why they think the law and, by extension, punishment is what we need to help make people more moral, when obviously that's not the case. What have you seen with bringing in Bible studies into the prison? How does that make a bigger difference than just sending people to prison so far as changing people so that they don't continue in their same criminal pattern?
Well, off the top, the two areas where we have the programs, the attitudes are totally different. And basically, they're safest areas in the jail. They send me people that would be normally in protected custody, but it's more dangerous for those individuals in protected custody than it is in the God spots, because basically the men learn to really care about each other and actually start to take care of each other, so they don't let things happen that would happen in other areas of jail, because they're actually starting to understand that God is holding them accountable, and it's more of accountability to God, not to our society. Because a lot of times your average con, even when you get released, you'll have if you have an ankle bracelet or if you have a PO, you'll basically be a good boy until you're off supervision, then you go back to the same individual that you were before, for the most part. But what you have is when God actually transformed. Because in my past, I had reformed myself where I cleaned up my act a couple of times, but the Lord hadn't touched me. And until I was truly transformed, until the Lord actually really got a hold of my heart, did everything change in my life. And that's where as the Word of God goes in there, you know, and for the most part, even not just God's pod in general, just the faith-based groups going in there, it's just a different type of training. Like right now here in this county jail, we're the first jail in the state, in the United States, to have a charter school. So we're going to actually start to educate anybody that hasn't got their diploma. We're actually going to try and get them get them into school, and it's a school that they can continue when they get out, to try and elevate their education level so they can actually have a fighting chance when they get out. Because some of them are overwhelmed. Some of my guys are just they'll knock over a gasoline station or try and rob a liquor store, but they're terrified to go and ask for a application for employment at some place because they just don't know how to fill it out. And I've been amazed to this point is we've taught hundreds of people how to read in there because they really want to learn to read the Bible. So they take that extra measure to start to learn to read. But that reading of the Bible also propels them on to reading other things and wanting to actually educate themselves and realize they've opened the door to a new horizon to them.
What about you, Molly? I mean, what do you think about the idea that, you know, just sending someone to prison really isn't going to solve the problem? As Christians, we know the problem is the heart and that we're all born sinful. Well, what should we be doing as Christians to help solve that problem, even when someone's sent to jail?
Well, I think we have sort of a before, during, and after obligation. I mean, obviously, if you can prevent someone from going to prison, that's fabulous. You're just, you know, going, you're stopping it before it even starts. So, I mean, I think we really just, the Christian community can do a lot for the people that it knows right now. I mean, if there's someone in your church and you know that they have a drug problem or you know that they have an alcoholism problem, I mean, maybe you can, you know, and you have a relationship with them, you know, that you'll have a meaningful voice in their lives, you know, you can certainly speak to them and try to hold them accountable and try to help them, try to get them treatment. You know, if you see, so, I mean, I think one of the saddest things in the world is theft crime, because in the church, it should never happen. No one in the church should ever have to steal. I mean, that's what we're there for. We're there for to support each other, to, you know, you know, meet each other's, you know, loose ends, to provide that, you know, financial support, that safety net for each other. So I think just the church in general can really have a much more of a community attitude, that we take care of each other, that, you know, when we see that someone's going down a bad path, we try to stop them. You know, we try to draw them back. And we just make it hard for people to commit crimes and make it hard for people in the church to go to prison. And I think during, you know, one of the biggest things I hear from members of our organization over and over again all over the country, especially in state prisons, is there just isn't programming. And people talk about the revolving door of prison. I think that's because a lot of people go to prison and there's nothing there. There's not drug treatment. There's not education. There's not, you know, X, Y, and Z. There's not anger management. And part of that is just these state prison systems are strapped financially. They're just trying to literally keep people off the streets. They don't necessarily have the money to do things like drug treatment and anger management. So they really do rely a lot on community volunteers, on faith-based groups, getting in there, doing it. And, you know, I have never, ever encountered a state prison system that didn't like, you know, volunteers coming in and offering to do things, because they don't necessarily have the manpower and the money to make it run. As far as afterwards, I mean, this is a place where the church can make a huge difference. A lot of people, you know, because there's nothing in prison, they're leaving prison, and, you know, they don't, like Greg said, they don't know how to fill out a job application form. They don't know how to read. They don't know how to type. They don't know how to do a job interview. Well, those are all things that can be taught, that all of us have done at one point or another. And so a church could set up an aftercare ministry where they do, you know, job training for people coming in off the streets. And then another important thing is during, you know, you can take care of the prisoner's wife and kids and, you know, bring them food, bring them clothes, help them, you know, with the financial difficulties that they're facing. Angel Tree, which is run by Prison Fellowship Ministries, is a wonderful program. You can, I did it last year, and, you know, you go out, you buy a Christmas gift for a kid whose parent is incarcerated. And, you know, it's from the parent. You're just doing all the legwork, and it's tremendous because it helps maintain that connection and between the parent and the child while they're away. So those are all some, you know, practical things that Christians can do. We just need to get creative and get organized and find a way to do it in our churches.
Well, that sounds all fine and good, but let's be honest. There's a lot of people listening right now who think, well, that sounds nice, but jail's scary, and the people in jail are scary. I don't know if I can do any of those things because, you know, what if this, what if that, what if they take advantage of me, or what if I, you know, all these scary what ifs that we come up with as, you know, people who are faced with the unknown. Most of us are not familiar with the prison system. And so I'm sure Christians, you know, hear, you know, we can do this, we can do that, and think, oh, that's nice. I'll just donate some money because that's safer. I'm at least once removed from having to personally interact. So the question for both of you, we'll start with you, Molly. How do we overcome our fear of getting involved with any sort of interaction with people who have been sent to prison?
Well, you know, this is always a funny thing to me because I've visited a couple of prisons, and each time I've gone, you know, my father, who's a very protective and wonderful man, he freaks out a little bit. You know, he's scared. He gets frightened. But, you know, I have to say, every time I've gone in, I actually think prison is one of probably the safest places you could possibly be. And when you go through the security check to get in, you understand why. I mean, the other thing is a lot of these people are, you know, they're people just like you and me. They're people who, you know, not everyone in prison is in there for first-degree murder. In fact, I would say the opposite is true. The vast majority of people are in there because of a drug crime, because of a theft crime. You know, maybe DWI, I know, is a big one as well in a lot of states. So I think it's just a whole, you just have to go, I think, because really you just have to say, you know what, I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to do it once, and I'm going to see what it's like. And I have been, like I said, I've been to several, and I've never been scared off. And I always say that if I were president for a day, I'd, you know, or God for a day, I'd make a law that every American has to visit a prison at least once, because You need to go see it. It's the only way to open your eyes.
Hmm. Well, what about you, Greg? I mean, what would you say for how we can overcome this stigma that we fairly or unfairly put on that?
Well, first of all, like the county jail here, you know, everybody in there is your neighbor, whether you want to acknowledge that or not. And what I've found is whether the guys have liked me or disliked me or whatever, whether they were really into the God stuff or they just recognized me as a chaplain in there, I found when I see them on the, in the community, they're grateful for the fact that I stepped in there. They actually, you know, even at a point where they're, you know, if they've seen me and they're intoxicated or high or whatever, and they're still, you know, they're in a position where they're, you know, normally they'd be scary, they still have recognized that I'm a chaplain, and the same authority that God had given me in that facility, it's still presented out here. People see me that way, and they give me that deemed respect. They don't mess with me. They don't like target me or anything like that. It's kind of been the opposite, where they kind of been blessed because I have extended myself, and most of the volunteers that I've extended, they have the utmost respect for them. So it's kind of the opposite. And the thing is, it is scary at first, and that's why I've set up outreaches where I take people in into our God's pod, so they kind of get acclimated with the nicer folks. But the reality is, throughout the jail, people are really receptive to just know that somebody's there to try and help them, you know. Because, like in this county jail, the only visits they get are through a video monitor. So the volunteers are the only, other than the guards and the medical staff, are the only tangible people that they ever get to talk to. Hmm. So it's such an opportunity to be able to actually really speak into their life at a time where it's a crossroads to me. You know, when you're incarcerated, it's a time that you're really thinking about things because, you know, no pun intended, after all, you have time, you know.
Yeah. Well, what about when prisoners get out of prison? You know, again, there's still that stigma. Molly was talking about that a little bit earlier, how your record always follows you. And that's even true in the church, you know. Unfortunately, so often in the church, we are not very forgiving of past mistakes. We're happy that God forgives us of our past mistakes, but for the other people, oh, you know, they went to prison, oh, they got divorced, oh, they had an abortion. So, you know, we still treat people like damaged goods. How can we overcome that? And how important is it, Greg, especially for the church, to reach out with grace, mercy, and forgiveness to someone who has come out of prison?
Well, the reality is that a lot of times they are encouraged to want to go into a church, and if they walk into a body and somebody's really, they're already coming in feeling like everybody's looking at me. An example, an individual just came out from doing 6 years. He came here to service. It was this, like, second Sunday, and he came up to me, and he came from my God spot, and he said, Pastor Greg, is it okay that I come to church here? And I said, are you coming here to make trouble, or you have any agenda? He goes, no, I just want to come to church. Well, you're welcome. You know, my concern is that you're not coming here to do the wrong thing. But if you're here to serve God and to grow in the Lord, then by all means, this is your church. And it like freaked him out, because you could tell he had that mentality where he was ready. He thought that I would, after all the ministering I did in the jail to him, I'm going to tell them, no, well, we don't know if we really want you or not. No, you know, and that's, so they're coming in with that. So sometimes all it takes is somebody to be really mean to them or kind of disrespectful, and they just feel like, well, I guess I'm not really welcome here. And, you know, and I'm really pretty straight out. You know, when I talk to them, I let them know, you know, I'm not here to try and bring predators into my church. I'm trying to grow disciples. You know, I a lot of times my ministry in the jail is more so I'm looking for diamonds, people that you knock off the rough edges in their life, and they're going to shine for Jesus, and that's what I encourage them. I want you to come and be a diamond here in our congregation, and we have quite a few individuals here that really shine, and people can't even there's some guys here I have to, you know, when I tell them that they're one of my guys, they're like, because it's gotten to a point where when people start hanging around me, they think they obviously have come from jail, because everybody I talk to is from jail. But that's not the case, but that's the stigma I have. But it's kind of cool, because I talk to everybody. I talk to all the school ministry students and a lot of different, you know, the pastoral staff and everybody. So You just never know.
Hey, you're talking with me now. And Molly, yeah, that's all right. I've had worse that's happened to me, believe me, for some of the things I've said even on this program. Molly, what about your thoughts on that? I mean, how important is it for us to get past that stigma of, okay, they went to jail, and how important is it for us to, you know, extend a certain type of clemency and say, well, you know, let us accept you, we'll show grace and forgiveness, and welcome you back into society?
Yeah, I think it's so important. I actually have a great example of an incident where I saw this recently. My church has a number of Bible studies, and we call them small groups. And to be a small group leader, you have to fill out an application form and submit it to the leader of all the small group programs. And they look at the application and check you out and make sure you're okay. And one of the questions on the application is, have you ever been convicted of a crime? And that just infuriated me when I was looking at that application form. And I thought, if there is one place on earth where you should not have to talk about your criminal history, it is in the church. Hmm. And, I mean, this whole reporting to report or not report convictions is a really hot issue. Usually you see a lot of protests from employers, because they want to know if the person they're hiring or interviewing has a criminal history. And I definitely think there are times when it would be unwise and downright negligent for someone not to ask. If for example, someone is leading is volunteering for children's church, you want to know whether that person has any history of, you know, child pornography crimes or child molestation crimes or anything like that, or child abuse crimes. You know, that's smart. But there are limits to that, and you can tailor that question so that you are being smart about it, as opposed to just a blanket, have you ever been convicted of a crime question, which I think if you're a person who has a former conviction, that would be pretty daunting on an application form. And at the same time, being a small group leader would be a great way for you to grow in your faith and to become a stronger person of faith and to bless other people. And I just thought it was so sad that that question was on there and that it might have diverted some people from really taking a big step of faith and contributing to the body of Christ. And so that's the example that recently infuriated me, but I'm sure there are others.
And I know what happens when you get infuriated. It's you don't want to be around. That I've learned. One of the things that you brought up, Molly, I thought was kind of interesting that I wanted to touch on before we ran out of time, was the idea of criminal justice reform being pro-life, which I thought was a very interesting angle to take on. Why don't you explain why that might be the case and why most people don't think of it that way?
Okay, well, I'll try to avoid talking about this for the rest of the show, but... we always hear that, Christians and particularly evangelical Christians vote based on pro-life values. And, they vote for candidates who are pro-life when it comes to abortion. And I think that one of the things that has always kind of irritated me about that is that pro-life really has a lot more to do with just abortion. That's not the only pro-life issue out there. The death penalty, for example, is a pro-life issue. Christians claim to believe in the ethic of life, that all life has value. And yet, we see also that traditionally a lot of evangelical Christians support the death penalty, which takes away human life. And then, like I was mentioning, the federal system, there are sentences where you can get a life sentence in prison for a drug crime. And, I mean, you are taking away someone's life. You may not be killing them, but they're going to spend the rest of their life behind bars. They're going to die in prison. And that is a human being who is made in the image of God, who has value to God, God may have a bigger purpose for than to be in prison for the rest of his life. And yet, we have many, many crimes that carry a life sentence and life without parole sentences, and other crimes that carry the death penalty. And whether or not those lengthy sentences may be justified, I think we do have to stop and say, are these sentences reaffirming this idea that all human life has value, and you know, are we willing to put limitations on ourselves as to how far we will go and how much we will take? And I think that those limitations are lacking in some areas of law right now and should really be replaced. And Christians have a leading voice in that. Christians have a value system that embraces that.
Well, what do you think, Greg? I mean, how much should we approach ministering to people in prison as a pro-life issue? Like Molly was explaining, that these are very important lives that otherwise are just being swept aside so that we don't have to deal with that problem anymore. I mean, if Christians approached it more as a pro-life issue, how might that change our approach to helping people in prison?
Well, I think it would change in drastic ways because, you know, you have people actually protesting at abortion clinics, and really they're very active when it comes to those issues. But when it comes to things that, you know, my heart goes out why I deal with the adult incarcerated, because the youth, at least a lot of people, well, their heart will go out for the youth because they figure that they have a life ahead of them, and you know, if we can catch them young, things will change. But there is an attitude within the church that just says, you know, because, you know, they're, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and it just kind of let them out. But the reality, what I've found, is that they will be back out in the streets, and they will be your neighbors again. And we should be concerned about them, their change and their rehabilitation, and their really that they are somebody that. You know, what really blows my mind, the thing that I always get a kick out of is, you know, I could have an inmate that's 50 years old, and I'll get his mom calling for him. Mm-hmm. Mama's love never ends, and mom will call, my mijo is in there, and I'm like, your mijo's 50 years old. And it's kind of beautiful, the value of the mom that to see that, you know, that's still her mijo, regardless of what's going on. And I believe our Heavenly Father sees us as still His child, regardless of where our situation, where we're at, and how deep in sin we've gotten. And God is still reaching out to us and reaching, you know, there's no depth that He doesn't reach to reach us, you know. And so there's no place that God can't get through, and there's a wall He can't break through.
Hmm. Now, you brought in a CD tonight called Straight Street. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit more about this? This is guys in the God Pod singing worship songs.
Yeah, basically, it was actually recorded in there. As I had said before, I had it was a guy who I had met here at the church that had a recording studio, and he kind of got caught back up in his drugs, and he ended up pawning his whole setup. So I pulled it out of the pawn shop, and I said, well, you know, I'm going to hold on to it and put it in the jail until we can, and we'll just record a CD while you're figuring out how you're going to get your money back together. And so it took him about 6 months to actually go through rehab and get himself on track, and a church in Idaho helped him get himself on his feet. And but meantime, we recorded in there, and it was, you know, because in this God's Pod, we have instruments, and we have everything, because we've shown ourselves that we don't hurt each other with our equipment or anything like that.
That's good.
So that's that we really value the fact that we've had the privilege of doing these things. But this is all, it's inmates singing. They all playing the instruments, and they're singing, and they're actually doing the recording. The only thing, Ken Riley cleaned it up for us a little bit, but for overall, it was inmate recorded and inmate done.
And one of the things I thought was interesting, I've heard a couple tracks off of that. These guys have a lot of passion for what they're singing about.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell with the way they sing that they're really singing their hearts out, not mm-hmm. because they're recording a CD, but because they really believe what they're yeah. singing and they really feel it. And I thought that was really touching, especially because I don't know if people would think of that with inmates, well, you know, passion and tenderness and being heartfelt in doing something.
Well, the thing with the Lord is that, you know, as time goes on, as you, if you get incarcerated over and over, because sometimes you have that revolving door, your family will get tired of you, and they'll stop, they'll put blocks on the phone, and nobody really wants you to, you know, want you to call their house because they don't want you to run up their bill. And so, but the only one that really listens is the Lord now. I guess to the point where they know that the only one that's ever been there truly for them is the Lord. Because every time they call upon Him, He's there. You know, and they may stray and chase the wind, but every time they come back, they realize, you know what? when that whirlwind is calmed down, they realize that the Lord's been there for them, and so that starts developing a love relationship with them, that they realize that the Lord has loved them through every situation that's gone on. Because sometimes they get to the point where a lot of people just they're just hard to love. There's that book by Warren Worsby on being a servant that talks about porcupine Christians. You know, there's some people that are just like little porcupines, where every time you try to hug on them, you get poked, and there's people that way, and sometimes they become that way, where nobody really wants them around. But the reality is that the Lord's always there, and they realize that. And as time goes on, that becomes a real serious conviction in their heart, that they know that the Lord's there for them.
Well, Molly Gill, we're just about out of time, so real quick, any parting thoughts that you want to share, and tell everybody where they can find out more about Families Against Mandatory Minimum one more time?
Sure. Our website is www.fam.org, fam with two N, and we're a nonpartisan, nonprofit, non-religious organization that's trying to get fairer sentencing laws, and I would just encourage Christians to get educated and, to spend some time at our website, do a little Googling, and remember that the people in prison are people who could be your loved ones and could be your best friends. And they are also, children of God. And so we have an obligation to them. We have a moral obligation and an explicit biblical obligation to them, right from the mouth of Jesus. And that alone should be enough to really motivate us to reach out to this group of people.
Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us, Molly. Hang on. I'll chat with you here in just a moment after we wrap things up, all right?
All right. Thanks, Johan.
Molly Gill calling in from Washington, D.C., where she's a staff attorney at Families Against Mandatory Minimum, doing some really fascinating work. And I love her heart and her passion for what she's doing. And, Greg, why don't you tell everyone a little bit more where they can find out more information? Maybe they were moved to volunteer at the God Pod, or they'd like to find out more information on how they can get involved and actually do something.
Well, they can call me here at the church, 344-0880, and I'm Pastor Greg. I'm a chaplain at the jail, and we have a breakfast here in the Plex on Saturday at 8 o'clock, and we pretty much we have our worship team is ex-inmates. A guy who gives the message is an ex-inmate, and the guy who's running it, which is me, is an ex-inmate. So we kind of we're all there, and it's awesome because God is changing a lot of hearts. And then we have a lot of our volunteers that are there, and it's an encouraging time. Also, the third Saturday of the month, we have an outreach where we take people that are. It's kind of we've wanted to set up something where that before having to get cleared and go through the whole process, they could actually go experience being in a unit. So we take them in, and we go into four pods with the worship team. Actually, the Lord has been so graceful to allow us to take the worship team from one unit into every unit that we want to take them to, and it's been beautiful. So we take a group. So it's a way of getting exposed, getting some exposure to the facility without having to commit yourself.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for joining us tonight and offering some of your insights as we've talked about this sometimes forgotten, sometimes ignored missions field that's right in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it's been an eye-opening conversation for everyone who joined us tonight. And the fact of the matter is we've all been prisoners at one point or not. We might not have been to jail, but we've all been slaves to sin. We've all been kept captive by sin. And it was Jesus Christ who set us free when he died on the cross and rose again from the dead 3 days later to bring us new life, to bring us eternal life. So we have a lot more in common with people in prison than we might think, insofar as we've all been prisoners. We've been set free by Christ, and they need that same type of freedom. And one of the ways that we can help facilitate that, as Molly has said, as Greg has said, is to get educated. And not just get educated with the people that we need to reach out to, but with the way that we can reach out. One of the things that we're doing to help people with that here at M88 is we're going to start the Truth Project through Focus on the Family, which is a study in what it means to have a biblical worldview. If you understand why you believe what you believe about the Bible, about God, about philosophy, about economics, about society, which is a lot of what we talk tonight, if you understand why the Bible has something to say about all of those things, why God has spoken about all those things, and how it impacts every aspect of our life, well, then you can be more effective in reaching out to people in prison and helping them understand why their lives need to change, why lives of the homeless need to change, why the lives of your neighbor needs to change. But you can't do that if you don't really know why you believe what you believe. And the Truth Project is going to really explore those issues and help you understand what it means to have a biblical worldview. And if you'd like more information about the Truth Project, because that's a good place to start. We as Christians can't really change the world if we ourselves haven't truly been changed by God. And so many of us are just content to be spoon-fed on a weekly basis, Sunday, Wednesday night, whatever. We just say whatever the pastor said. No, we need to know more than that. Find out more about the Truth Project, truthproject.org, or we're going to be facilitating some groups through M88, and you can learn more about that at m88.org. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about sexual purity and God's plan for sex and why sex is good. Yeah, I said it. Sex is good when it's according to God's plan. When you try it the world's way, it's just a mess, and it's not nearly as awesome. And we're going to talk a little bit about that next Sunday on Raw Talk with a couple special guests, so I hope you come back and join us for that. Until then, have a shway week in the Lord, and thanks for hanging out with me and my guests here on Raw Talk on M88.